Good morning. I'm Dan Noon. I'm the CEO of G2 Goldfields. We trade on the Toronto main board under the symbol GTWO and on the OTCQX under the symbol GUIGF. We have a project in Guyane. It's a high-grade gold system which we discovered in 2019. We recently updated our resource to just over 2 million ounces, and we're currently drilling on that resource to expand it, but also with our new discovery at Oko Northwest, and we have started drilling at the Tracy project just 5 kilometres north of that as well.
Dan, thank you very much for the introduction. Always good to talk to you. The last time we spoke, it was in person at the PDAC. Where are we now? It's about 6 weeks ago. The gold price was around $2,000 per ounce and had just kind of got its first bit of wind in its sails. Here we are sitting around $2,370 an ounce, so kind of $320 an ounce higher. Your share price has improved a lot, and there have been a couple of big reasons for that. One is, as you said, the new resource, and the other is the move in the gold price. You've been marketing. Perhaps before we get into the nitty-gritty of the technical aspect of the gold, of the resource, tell me what the changes and how things are different now in the marketing to what they were even 6 months ago.
Yeah, I'd say in the marketing, it's probably a bit more of a retail. Investors are starting to look at the stocks. People who have been watching for a while, people who would naturally at times invest in this sector, are starting to come back in. The gold funds themselves, not so much. They've still been getting redemptions up until the end of March. Hopefully that changes. Some generalist funds are starting to make calls and starting to enter the market. But it hasn't really been a rush yet. But people are saying it's coming. Basically, they see that the gold's a good place to be. There's a lot more inquiries about it. We've certainly had lots of interest in the marketing and a lot of calls every day. So definitely the eyeballs are coming back onto the sector. I'm not sure that a lot of money is coming yet, but I think it's certainly on the edge of that happening.
Fascinating that the gold funds are still seeing redemptions. I mean, is that what they're telling you when you speak to them?
Yeah, exactly. As at the end of March. Now, hopefully that may change, but definitely, obviously people that were certainly in the States, people were saying this might not be a real bull gold market, that they were thinking it was just a strange lift that can't be explained by the interest rates or whatever else. So I think in North America, people are still thinking, you know, what's going on, whereas certainly in Europe and more so in Asia, they believe this is the start of a real bull run in gold and they want to get into it. So I think the North Americans are lagging a bit on this one, just in disbelief a bit. I think that it's a real genuine bull market for gold.
And also perhaps if you don't really believe it, it's something to trade, you know, it's just something to sell into rather than to add into. Interesting. And the generalists that you've spoken to you're speaking to for the first time, do they say, I'll tell you what, we'll buy some on the open market while we get to know you a little bit? Or are they saying, we need to have 3 meetings and really kind of follow you quarter by quarter before we dip our toe in the market? You know, what is there anybody kind of active?
I think there's definitely been a few who come in. They may have already known of us prior to the meetings we've had with them. But it's not a mad rush at the moment. I mean, normally it is, let's have a meeting and then have a second one and a third. But I think we've certainly seen an increase in volumes. There's no doubt about that. And I don't think that's the gold funds. So it's either retail investors or generalists.
Good. Well, it's good to see. I'm delighted for you, and I'm also delighted for everybody in the sector that the gold price and the environment seems to be changing. Right, that's the kind of the general background. But specifically in terms of your resource update, your strap line, G2, where grade matters, that's an interesting one because I noticed that there were elements of your new resource update that were grade, you know, 1 or 2 grams gold, and there were elements which were much higher. Could you unpack the resource and kind of from a top-down basis for me, please?
Yeah, so basically, the Oko Main Zone stayed the Oko Main Zone. It's a high grade, 9 grams in the underground. Came a bit off in the open pit because last time we modelled it all the way to the surface as underground, 2 gram, 4 gram cutoff. This time We took the cutoff down to 1.8 for the underground, which didn't change that much because we tightened up the drilling and tightened up the high grade, which was actually higher, and the diluted grade was lower. So basically, the high grade in shear 5 this time is 25 grams, but the diluted value is at 0.7 as opposed to 15 and 2 last time. That's just with the certainty of the drilling. So OCO main zone stayed relatively the same, and that is a high grade shear osa deposit. The saprolite we brought in at OCO main zone, but also along the Ganni trend, saprolite has a cutoff at 0.3. So that tends to drag in a lot of low grade material, right? Now it's free dig, free milling, it's a great stuff, saprolite, but it tends to be low grade. So a lot of tons of our saprolite came in at lower grades, and we designed a pit over the Ganni area. So Ganni is a more disseminated style of mineralisation. It does have that high grade footwall, which is on average 4.5 metres wide by 10 grams, but the body itself is 25 metres wide, averaging about 2.3 grams. So that definitely drops the average grade down for the deposit in general. So I think we had like 5 million tonnes at 9 grams and 14 million tonnes at 2.5 or something, right? So that drops the average grade down a lot, but you still have, that's why we report OCO main zone and Ganni as separate things, because they are really separate bodies. You have this open pitable, more disseminated style of mineralisation at Ganni, but you have that extremely high grade that we have at OCO main zone. And to report those two together, it's a funny one. So how do you explain that? We think we didn't do a bad job in the first release, and in the 4.1 that's reported, it'll be a lot clearer. But basically, two separate deposits in reality.
In the OCO main zone, in your pit, in the open pit, you've got an indicated resource at 2 grams-ish and a kind of an inferred resource at 1-ish. Is that because that's reflecting the wider saprolite, which hasn't been drilled out to the same drill density, and that the indicated is kind of closer to that central structure, which has got a kind of a higher core to it?
Exactly. So in the last year when we were drilling at depth, and also but also infilling at OCO main zone a bit, because we had those wide spaced holes, and corporate certainly wanted to see it closer when you're drilling out material, that really converted all that higher grade into indicated. So the halo around that, which gets dragged into that pit, is indicated as well. Whereas all the lower grade stuff, which we really hadn't, and we still don't, spend a lot of time at drilling to low spacings, we just leave as inferred, and it is what it is. So in general, if you look at all our indicated is higher than our inferred resources, and that's the reason.
Will you have to change that when you go to pre-feasibility level to kind of, because you can't include the inferred in the mine plan, you know, so... will you have to kind of do some infill on those to get it to indicated level?
Someone will have to, yeah. I don't know whether it's going to be us. But at the moment, we really are focused on expanding the resource. If it ever gets to that, so it's a long way down the road, and I don't think that really should be us. I think the district will come together and be built by someone rather than just us, I'd say.
The district coming together, there's lots of talk about kind of a three-way merger, you know, a bigger company coming in and taking out the whole district, which of course includes you and your neighbours to the south. Do you talk about it with your neighbours to the south, or is that kind of off the cards?
Not really. I mean, basically, a lot of bakers talk to us about it, obviously. You know, for us, they're fairly advanced. They've drilled down to a kilometre. They're going to a PEA in the middle of the year. So they're sort of on that track. We're still very much in exploration phase. Obviously, at the moment, our focus is to drill OCO Northwest, Tracy, Aramu, and to depth at Ganni South and now Ganni North. The hole we released recently, 25 grams, was... suggest to us at Ganni North, but probably got another Ganni Central there, right? So that is low-hanging fruit. But, and because Reunion is so far advanced on us to a degree that they're probably the ones who would need to do something prior to us. So they're probably the ones who will jump first. And that, when it happens, obviously that'll kick the whole thing into play, right? And we're ready for it, obviously. We're not going to sit around saying, give me another 6 months so I can drill more. But by the same token, we're not ready to pull the trigger ourselves on something like that. Obviously, Anglo came in for 11.8%. They'd love to own a whole lot of it now. but that's really not feasible for us either. So we'll see how it goes, but I don't think we'll be the ones kicking the game off, but we certainly are ready for when it happens.
And on that theme, essentially what I'm hearing from you is that you're still very much about expanding the envelope of your ounces. You're still in the growth phase. It's the lower cost, and in some ways, the more intellectually rigorous, but more technically, it's kind of more pure geology and resource estimation rather than kind of advanced engineering.
Absolutely. And like you say, it is technically more challenging and intellectually more stimulating, but yet also drill holes that are dusters, right? It's hard to get the guys off drilling fantastic holes all the time as you step down on high-grade mineralisation. But the real value add is near-surface ounces along trend, because they change the scope of what someone's going to build. And so it makes it more attractive for the end buyer, who can put a bigger number on the value of the asset. And showing that district scale, you know, we've already got two deposits. We have to show, you know, OK Northwest, we have to pull that together. Then Tracy and Arrowmill, you start to see that you've got these long zones of mineralisation at surface and down to, you know, hundreds of metres, which they know will continue to depth. And so that's what we need to do now.
But you also mentioned that you're kind of drilling Gunny North at depth and Gunny South at depth. Is that a contradiction?
No, because they're only down to about 200 metres now. So we'll take them down to 500 metres. We've got this artificial barrier at 500 metres, which we chose, really because it starts getting expensive. I mean, you drill those holes and it's not necessarily the best value add for the company. You take the money in, supposedly adding value. Drilling those holes doesn't add much NPV, if any. It adds life,
yeah.
It adds ounces, but you know, as an exploration company, we need to add value every time we take money in. We took that $22 million in. We need to see in 12 months that we've added, you know, exponential amount of value. So we don't see us doing that by drilling deeper than 500 meters at Gani and OK Main Zone, but we see that by making new discoveries. So that's really where we are focused.
So in a sense, you're just putting a kind of a few holes down at the 500. You're not going to drill out resources at 500 meter depth. You're just going to do enough to kind of confirmatory drilling at 500. Confirmatory exploration. It's almost like an oxymoron.
I think at Gani we'll drill to inferred down to 500 meters, but that's 80 meters step outs. That's easy. You get down to 500 pretty quickly on doing those sort of step outs. You know, unless you add some super high grade plunging down, you might chase it a bit, but not a lot. No, really, we really are focused on showing the size and scale of the district, because we think that is the value add here right now.
Okay, and you've mentioned Tracy and Arrowmill, and I think I saw one of your recent releases, kind of Birdcage and Amsterdam. You know, where just kind of talk me through the trend, if you would.
Okay, so basically, as you come north, you've got the OK Main Zone, or Block 4, OK Main Zone, Gani, OK Main Zone. Then it rotates around to OK Northwest, Tracy, Arrowmill, and that's the regional fold. And that's post-mineralisation. So initially, all that lined up north-south on the basin margin structure. It's been folded around, and so basically, your geometry is just folded around. But that basin margin structure repropagates itself. So you've actually got mineralisation continuing north again and south of the reunion block. So to the north, we have Birdcage, which is hosted in the magnetite-rich volcanics again, like Gani. And that's where the underlying vendor, Michael Vieira, mined 60,000 ounces in 2004. So we know there's pits there. We know he was mining saprolite with quartz veining in it. They just pump the tailings from one to the other now. We'll have to bite the bullet and start drilling some holes out there to get a handle on the geology and hopefully early hit some good mineralisation. But that's definitely a big target area, and it's really adjacent to where we are at OK Main Zone now, so it's definitely a hot target. Amsterdam is further to the north, and that's really where the Arrowmill Bathlet to the north, which that contact trends east-west. And then you have the north-south along the OK Main Zone. You come in through the OK Mountains out there where Amsterdam is, and lots of gold in the creeks, but it's all lateritized on the tops of the hill. So really difficult as far as geochemistry and mapping. But so we need to, we're certainly soil sampling out there. We'll do some more geophysics, and we'll start to drill where we have around the outcrops in the lower lying areas and the creeks, and start to figure out what's going on out there. Because that's also, obviously, geologically, a very, very obvious area to go exploring.
And just when you talk about the kind of the basin margin repropagating and the kind of the picking up the north-south and the mineralization being, the folding being post-mineralization, does that mean that there's been a kind of a subsequent phase of mineralization and a reactivation of the north-south structure?
Yeah, that's what I believe. or right. give it the or. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, or, well, maybe I should not go down the geological or. The kind of on one hand, on the other hand, give me a geologist with one arm, please. Right, and I'll avoid the geological discussion. It sounds to me like that northern block, that continuation, that Amsterdam area, is kind of in the scout plus kind of early stage reconnaissance exploration, whereas your more concentrated effort is going to be on the known arc, Oko Northwest, Tracy, Aramu. Is that correct?
Absolutely, because there's already mid-scale mining operations on those claims. We have outcrop. We know what the geology is. And now it's just, okay, let's go find out where the higher grade patches of mineralization are. And, yeah, I mean, it's a lot easier. And then it's definitely, we've got material out there running ounces. And now it's, okay, let's put together some coherent bodies. You know, and we believe we should be able to do that. So we're way, way more advanced than Amsterdam for sure.
Okay, so talk me through what that means in terms of drill rigs, drill meters, time, and money.
Okay, so basically we've got, we burn about $1 million a month with 5 rigs. And that's about what we average out there. And as we drill areas like okay, Northwest and Tracy, where the holes are shallow, we're down to 4 rigs at the moment because we're popping out a hole a day. So the geos are really up to their necks in core at the moment. But as we start drilling deeper holes, we add more rigs because you know, the zones you're targeting are further between. So on average, $1 million a month, on average 5 rigs, and we think we can get 75,000 metres this year doing that.
Wow. So, I mean, we're about 7.5 months left of this year. How many metres have you... I mean, if it was straight line from here, that'd be 10,000 metres a month, but presumably you've already done 20 or 30,000 metres this
month. We've been running about 6.5 to date. So, certainly February, March. We're probably already about 15,000 into this, so probably another 60.
Yeah. Good. And therefore, rolling news releases... I mean, presumably you'll batch up samples and do a kind of news release every 6 weeks or every month or something?
Of that nature, yeah. I mean, basically, it has to be significant, so and it has to mean something, especially when you're doing exploration holes. You need to be able to say, not just, we hit something, it's like, what does it mean? So every month for 6 weeks is pretty reasonable as far as advancing the idea geologically. And obviously, if you have barn burn them and you've got to get it out there and maybe in between, but... In general, that's the sort of cadence we'd like to see.
And you've also mentioned in your news releases that you've got a better handle on the kind of the exploration. Can you just remind me what you mean by that?
Yeah. Okay. So basically, it's really an extra handle on better handle on the deformation history. So, and we know that you know it was the north south basin margin structures which control mineralization. It's over really east-west up at the Aramu. Within that, you have high-grade upflow zones, which is the intersection of this, that's shearing and the actual plane of the F1 folds. So, and that's repetitive. And we see that all the way along the Oko and Gani zone, and we see that rotated 90 degrees heading out to through Oko Northwest, Tracy and Aramu. So, you know, we had Brett Davis out there last year and the Anglo guys as well. We walked through the whole district, and we see that repetition constantly along there. So we sort of have a model which is working, and it'll work till it doesn't, as we always know. But at the moment, that is really giving us the results that we need. So we keep testing that. And, with our eyes still open on other things as well. Certainly we've come across some conglomerates out of OK Northwest, which are intriguing. But in general, we know what the good hosts are, the magnetite-rich metamorphosed basalts, the quartz veins and the carbonaceous sediments, and... on those structural, in our structural environments. So basically that's what we're chasing, but with our eyes open, because there's always other things which surprise you as well.
Yeah, it'll work, as you said, until it doesn't. When you first mentioned that those structural elements or those structural features, that to me sounds like a very geological control that you have to be plugged in and clued in on the geology. Then when you talked about the favourable... rocks, you talked about kind of a magnetite-rich basalt. Presumably, that will stand up nicely on the geophysics. Can you target with a blended approach of geophysics and geology, or do you have to kind of get into the weeds, get into the nitty gritty, and then kind of assess where you are on the structure and the geology first before you kind of then expand your drilling net?
Okay, historically we've gone with our soils, and that works. But when you get into the covered areas covered by sand or tailings, we think the geophysics works. Now, it certainly showed up at Gannie and helped us there because that was all covered in previous workings. And so that worked. And that magnetite-rich metamorphic really does stand out. It's up to 35% magnetite. The carbonaceous sediments actually stand out as well with VLF. We do ground VLF as well. So we can actually map these beds out and all the folding. We're still the folding within that. And so, which is critical because we see some of these actual planes of these folds being where the shears are developing. So, it's just classic. As you get more and more information, you start to understand better. And now you start to target in areas which have been disturbed or which are under the white sand, which we have in areas out there.
Essentially, it sounds like an integrated program of soils. The geochemistry, the geophysics, and the geology, the three Gs. Five rigs. Will you take a rig off to test the far north, or are you basically going to concentrate from Okone through to, I can't remember where that's the end, is Aramu.
Aramu. Logistically, we're moving from Okone northwest. We just started Tracy. Aramu, we still need to do a bit of geophysics up there. I wouldn't drill it today. I don't think we are quite ready. If we're successful at Okone northwest, we'll keep there as we move along. We just need to add more rigs and add more personnel. But in general, we just keep moving along that trend. It seems to be a logical way of doing it at the moment. But if we are successful at Okone northwest, we'll just keep drilling Tracy, drill Aramu. I'd like to think you're successful at all of them. Sometimes you do need to pull off and have a think about it, though. So we're reactive to what the results that we get.
Results,
And what we're doing. Could we drill them all at the moment? Probably not. I don't think we've got the manpower to have rigs on all those sites.
Yeah. And what about metallurgy, petrology, petrographic studies, kind of the ongoing advancement up the understanding curve, as well as doing the exploration, growth, resource work?
No, exactly. So we have a metallurgy program planned. We're in the process of moving all our coarse rejects out to site, and our new site storage facility at site. So once they're all there, we'll select out the coarse rejects, which we'll use for bulk samples from Okone Main and from Gannie, and we'll send them off to a lab in Canada and do more advanced metallurgy. Because once again, we see that as value add for any potential buyer, because they can look at it and say, well, these are the recoveries that we can plot in. This is the style of plant we need to build. So for us, that is value added, and we'll do that this year.
So if I hear you correctly, you're essentially trying to show it in the best light as quickly as possible in terms of scale and workability.
Absolutely. And then shorten that timeline to permitting. We've started the environmental baseline study 5 months ago. That's a two-year process. So, and after that, you submit that with a feasibility study for a mine permit. And the last one was turned about 6 months. That was Toroparu. So we think that whole process is a 30-month process, and we're probably 5 months into it. So timeline-wise, we need to keep shrinking that so the eventual buyer can say, okay, I put the money down today, and I can start mining in X months. And so when they're calculating their IRRs, they can pay us more. Is the logic behind that?
Do you get any feedback from the government on kind of whether they would object to two standalone plants? Or I mean, I know in theory, logically, it makes sense just to have one player in the whole district, but there are scenarios where two might happen. Do you get pushback from the government?
No, we haven't had anything of that nature yet. I mean, basically, I think the government wants to see a number of mining companies come into the country. They'd like to see the mining industry develop and become more modern, no doubt about that. So they like to see it when companies like Anglo Gold stick their head up and say they want to be here. So I don't think they'd see it as a negative. But I mean, in general, I think for shareholders, in general, I think you create more value by having one operator, but that isn't necessarily always work out that way.
Yeah. And you've seen the excellent video of the hard talk with the president of Guyana giving back about the environmental approach to the British. But
I like hard talk. It's always been the case. It's not him asking the questions. They're not his questions. He's asking the questions which are being asked around the globe. And so, and the president answered them very clearly and straightforward. I thought, I had one investor say to me, well, if you've got a president like that, you don't have too many worries about investing in the resources in that country. And I'm like, yeah. It was a very strong interview, and I thought played very well.
Yeah, good. Well, Dan, thank you very much. It's been a whistle-stop interview. Good luck with the exploration, and I look forward to seeing the news releases as they come out on the kind of the shallow ounces, growing the envelope along that trend. All to look forward to.
Well, thanks very much, Mel, and I'm sure we'll get back together in the not too distant future.